a dispute over domestic violence funding. What really happened? Eric Turner is leaving the General Assembly. Troubles with the toll road lease, more refunds from the BMV, and the state Senate race that pits a gay marriage opponent against an openly gay challenger. That plus the testimony of an Ebola survivor and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 19, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the Pence administration was accused of seeking cuts in funding for domestic violence programs in Indiana at a time when demand is up, in part due to high-profile cases involving NFL players. The governor's office says that's not the case and later reached an agreement to spend the money. Advocates feared cuts of more than $1 million from the $3.5 million budgeted. A spokesperson for the Indiana Criminal Justice Institute said funds would be withheld until shelters tell them how they'll use the money, but that funding is the same as 2013. Here's what Laura Beery of the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence said before the deal was reached.
And it feels like it's an ongoing battle to justify our need for critical support, and that they haven't been listening to or even reading the reports or stats of how many people were turning away or how many are dying each year.
What's really going on here? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, did advocates cry wolf?
No, I don't think they did. I mean, they were changing the way they were doing things. And in the climate of the Pence administration, with the reversions that we've seen, doesn't matter what the legislature appropriates, he's not going to spend it. He's going to revert it back to make his credentials for a national bid seem better, and without regard to what the issue is. So I think they were exactly right to focus attention on this, and obviously the administration, to its credit, backed down. But they ought to be finding ways to spend all the money that was appropriated by the legislature and then some, because the need is so great out there. We see it everywhere, and we need to do more, and we're not doing it.
It's my understanding that the call for a spending plan is something new. It's not been done before.
They're trying to make sure that everybody that gets state or gets any dollars to go to any grant programs are accountable for those dollars. And they were going to get the same funding they got last year at the same level. But because additional revenues were granted, you have to propose a spending plan on how you're going to spend it so that you have accountability for those dollars. That's what they're doing. And nobody backed down from anything. The governor never called for cuts in this program. That's just not the case. And all they have to do is propose the plan, and then they'll get their money. And that's what I'm told, that's what the agreement is, and that's what they're going to do.
Nothing changed. A big misunderstanding.
Nothing changed. They didn't back down. The people are doing what they were supposed to do. They're submitting the plan, and they'll get their money.
People are accountable. Agencies like this are accountable all the time. They have audits.
Then they shouldn't
have
any problem with this.
They have audits by the state. They have audits by the outside auditors, and they have audits by the United Way. So it's not a question of accountability.
It's a question of accountability.
No, it's not, Mike.
Yes, it is.
That's a good backpedal, but that's not what it is.
That's exactly what it is.
Well, John, I think what you've got here, at the very least, is a misunderstanding on the part of the advocates, but it could be because things weren't communicated to them very well.
Well, I think there probably were some holes in the communication, and you read some of the accounts of email that was going back and forth where there was clearly the impression given that there was, I think, about $160,000 that would be reverted. So, we get into a discussion of what's a cut, what's a reversion, what's new money, what's old money. The bottom line here, it seems to me, this is just a timing problem for the administration. Had this come up probably 6 months ago, maybe the advocates might have questioned it. They might have had a news conference, but clearly what's driving this now and what's fueling the media attention in this conversation is what's happening on the national stage with Ray Rice and
the
NFL.
We had another domestic violence murder just two days ago.
Well, there's clearly a national dialogue going on right now, and this is part of it.
But also what's driving it is the fact that the state agencies have been requested to revert some of the money that's been allocated to them in the state budget, and it seems that there's a trust problem to some degree.
It doesn't have anything to do with reversions.
It does not.
The advocates, were acting out of the belief that some of the money would be reverted.
And I think that you have touched on a problem, and Ann's raised the issue too. Whether or not it's a part of this discussion, we've seen before where it has created confusion, and the lawsuit that was filed, I don't remember exactly the agency, but it was not that long ago, by the same people who filed the lawsuit against the BMV for the overcharge.
You're talking about the adoption subsidy.
That's the one. And so what we've got here is a history, and it precedes this governor, to be fair, of budgets saying, building in reversion numbers so that an appropriation of $1 million may be an appropriation of $990,000 or whatever the case may be. The public thinks that they're getting $1 million, but everybody inside understands that it's 990, and the money that goes back is used to bolster the bottom line of the budget. It's not illegal, it's not untoward, but it's also not straightforward and can create these kinds of situations where you have confusion, where people think that the money is here, but the understanding is that it's not really there.
But you also have cases where the legislature builds it in, not with the expectation of a reversion where it's not being spent.
This is the same administration that just added $10 million to the adoption program.
Finally. But it only went back to July 1.
It didn't make a difference. Finally, Ann.
Well,
they
finally.
Did.
It was started,
they added
the problem
$10 million
started
to the program.
2009. And that's
they may not
good.
Do it on your timeline, but they did it.
Well, they didn't do it on the timeline they promised.
What strikes me is there was a simpler time when people, advocates and various groups that were lining up for state dollars, the battle was fought during the budget session of the General Assembly.
Knew what you got.
And at the end, you either you know, went and toasted your success or you drowned your sorrows.
That's right.
Now, that's only one step in the process, and actually the real fight or the real number crunching, the decision making, comes much later in the process.
It comes in the governor's office,
the
governor.
As you monitor the economy and you see what's going on out there, we've talked about this on several occasions, a few weeks ago exactly, where we said that it's smart to be cautious about how you're spending your money because of the uncertainty of this economy.
Yeah.
That's exactly what's going on. $2 billion.
Let's
move
on. Right.
Yeah. So we let people die.
That's right. Thank
Perfect.
You. No, that's
this just in. State Representative Eric Turner, Republican from Cicero, recently involved in an ethics scandal, has announced that he's going to leave the General Assembly. He will resign his seat if reelected in November to take a job out of state in Atlanta, Georgia. Mike McDaniel, is that a good way to approach this?
I'm surprised. I mean, this just happened. We just heard about it. I'm surprised that he would announce this now, and I'm surprised he wants to get out of the legislature, quite frankly. Because, I mean, he's been a longtime player there. He's been there 20-some years.
He's been raising money for the campaign.
And he has sponsored a lot of very important legislation during his time in the legislature, some major pieces of legislation on things, everything from transportation to all kinds of issues that most people wouldn't take on that he did. And, you know, I'm surprised. But I think this recent activity and all the publicity that surrounded it probably is the reason, and he's probably said, I'm done with it, and I'm out the door.
He's also facing...
He's also said that he's made enough money as a legislator, and he can be out the door as well.
Well, he's facing a challenge from Democrat Bob Ashley. He's not faced challenges in recent elections. With him admitting that he's not going to serve, What does that do to Ashley's chances?
Oh, I think that improves Bob Ashley's chances. I think voters in that district will, you know, who do you get? Some draft choice to be named later? You don't even know who you're voting for when you vote, if you vote Republican in that district. And based on this, it's not just the publicity surrounding the scandals. It's what he did with that office and the violation of the trust that those voters put in him.
Well, he was not found guilty of anything.
Yeah. He was not found guilty of anything, but anybody who thinks that that wasn't an ethical or moral violation is got a different moral compass.
Surprised to see him leaving the General Assembly?
I am surprised to see that he's leaving the General Assembly, because I did think that he, he was going to lose his position as Speaker pro tem, but I thought he had weathered the storm and would go forward from there. But I do think it's an interesting decision to announce your resignation now, but not make it effective until after the election, because I do think Ann raises a good point. The voters in that district will know the candidate on one side, but they won't know who the candidate is on the other side.
Yeah, we've seen in the past where legislators have stepped down shortly after an election, when it appeared that they knew what they were going to do prior to the election. There is also a level of honesty here, isn't there? Letting the taxpayers and the voters know what you're going to do.
I guess you could look at it that way, but if, and I don't know how quickly this offer from Atlanta came together, but presumably it wasn't just a lightning bolt the heavens that said, take this job. So presumably, to your point, Jim, there might have been a chance to disclose this or make this decision earlier so that you could have
he had to get off the ballot by some point in August.
Yes.
If he was going to be replaced. So it's
September.
Yes.
And despite the notion of weathering the storm, I do think it would have been an unpleasant session, because we already have the speaker who has said that because of this situation, he is advocating a sweeping ethics package. So every time that is written about, or you do a story on air about it, I'm guessing there will be that sort of second sentence that says this grew out of Eric Turner's missteps, apparent missteps, not illegal, I guess, by some definitions, but perhaps questionable missteps. And do you really want to be the second line of every story written about ethics reform throughout the entire session?
I think that's right. The state agency that oversees the Indiana Toll Road has given the highway's private operator until late November to prove that it's meeting its debt obligations. The Indiana Finance Authority asked Toll Road ITR Concessions, ITR Concessions, for proof within that it's meeting those obligations. I used to know how to read. After it missed a June interest payment, the questions were raised. The Wall Street Journal reported last week that ITR was considering filing for bankruptcy and pursuing a restructuring of a roughly $6 billion debt load that could lead to selling the toll road lease. ITR, its parent company, paid Indiana $3.8 billion up front for a 75-year lease. Toll revenues have not met expectations. Mike McDaniel, what does this say about the wisdom of the toll road lease?
One of the best deals that's ever been made. I mean, $3.8 billion up front. We still own the toll road, and we will always own the toll road. If they do go out of business, somebody's going to take that over, and we get to negotiate that deal. So, I mean, it's one of those deals where it's still our road. We got $3.8 billion worth of projects in the ground. If you like driving from Indianapolis to South Bend without stopping at 600 stoplights, well, that's a product of this deal. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like Mitch Daniels said when he made the deal, look, if they overpaid, that's their problem, you know, and we got the benefit of this, and we always will own the toll road.
If they default, we get the road back.
And we're first in line on all of bankruptcy.
We don't know what happens after that, because it goes into bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy court judge can have something to say about that. And obviously this model isn't working. The tolls are not high enough. The road usage isn't enough to maintain it and deal with the debt. So then the question is, what happens? Does the maintenance go down, or do the tolls go up? One of those two is going to happen under these circumstances. Even if the debt is restructured and lowered, it's still going to have a problem, which is why you don't encumber something for 75. Oh, yeah?
No, it's just built into the agreement.
The agreement.
The second that they don't
the
do
agreement
it, we
can
take it over at any time.
By the bankruptcy judge.
No, it can't be.
Just the way
no,
the.
No, it can't be.
Just, okay,
let's
Michael,
give John a chance.
When did you get your law degree?
The attorney general says it can't, and
the
I just.
The attorney general
about.
Doesn't even know an unconstitutional statute.
Let's give John a chance. Should the taxpayers be worried?
I think they should be paying attention, if not worried, because the toll road has become a commodity in this case. By the contract, there are certain obligations that have to be met, but Anna's right. It can be negotiated post-bankruptcy. Even if it doesn't go bankrupt and they restructure the debt, it could change the terms. And you know, there will be an understanding that there are obligations. But those things can change, and 75 years is a long time. Now, clearly, the company overpaid, or they wouldn't be in the situation they're in, and there will be pressure on tolls going forward. They may be much higher. So I think that there's reason for concern, and it's a good thing Indiana got the money up front because it didn't look like it would get it now if it was still waiting on payments.
The state has been comforted by the terms of the initial lease, which suggested that tolls could be raised only once a year, I think July 1st, and only a certain amount. However, if this consortium holds on to it and they do restructure the debt, the terms of that lease change, I believe, in 2017, and it was described as somewhat relaxed terms, so that the amount that can go up, presumably still once a year, is more than is the case now. So there might be some sticker shock for motorists and people who use that thoroughfare in 2017. But whoever said the model is just not working, I think that's the real lesson here. You look at this is California, Texas, South Carolina, Virginia. All of those states have had similar sorts of infrastructure leases, and guess what?
They didn't get your money up front either. All of them.
I don't know about that.
They didn't get that much. That actually was a lot of money. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: does the toll road lease still look like a good deal? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it's still too early to tell. Last week's question was, what do you think of the state's new technology center? Your choices were A, it's an unnecessary expense, 50% took that, 47% said it's a big advancement, and 3% said, I don't care about the inner workings of government. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The Bureau of Motor Vehicles has admitted to overcharging car owners on their annual registration. Errors were made on the calculation of auto excise taxes. They're collected by the BMV based on the value of your vehicle. The BMV says an adjustment factor was incorrectly applied on some 180,000 vehicles that resulted in $29 million in overpayments. John Ketzenberger, is this becoming a trend?
Well, I think, you know, this is the second incident where we've had overcharging by the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. So I think that you're on the verge if you're not already there on a trend. It's certainly discomforting. As someone who uses the BMV, and millions of people in the state do, you expect that transaction to be pretty straightforward and fairly applied. The technology wasn't there, and the mistakes were made, and we find out a decade later that money's coming back, but that's a reason to be concerned about it.
Interesting to point out, though, that it has been a decade and three different governors, so it's hard to pin the blame on anybody except the agency.
Right.
Also interesting, I think, there wasn't a lawsuit. There wasn't an investigative report that brought this about. They found it themselves. Is that comforting?
I guess if you're looking for silver linings, the bad news is we took $29 million of your money that we weren't supposed to take, but we found it. I guess that's better than not finding it, but still it's when you see these, and this has happened it's not an everyday occurrence, but certainly several times we can point to, and since we've become so reliant on computer programming and technology to do all of the transactions, I mean, all it takes is one miscalculation or one misapplication of one.
We got some software issues here.
And that's we've seen that several times now. Yeah. So it's now I guess this is a reversion of sorts. $29 million coming back the other way.
There you go. It's troublesome.
Well, first of all, as John pointed out, anytime you have a big database like this, there's always these kind of problems. This is probably the largest database in all of state government. And clearly this has been going on, like you said, since the early O'Bannon administration years and forward. This is not the second time. This is about the fourth time we've had this problem. And I do give them stop points for finding it themselves and pointing it out. And the good news, as far as I'm concerned, is, one, they can correct it, and two, they've got the money to cover it. They're going to pay the people back that they have the money coming, and they're going to do it with interest. And I'm glad that we have a state government that has the money in place to allow them to do that.
And they're going to do it with refunds. You don't have to wait until your next registration and pay a reduced amount.
Did I miss something? I thought when Mitch Daniels was governor that we remade the BMV.
We did.
And it was supposed to be the premier agency in state government, and it was going to be run like a business, and all of these things were going to be perfect.
He was concentrating on the branches.
Oh, I see. Not the overall operation.
The home office.
It's the
home
office is where the problem is. In fairness,
before you... $50 million mistakes.
Look, you still would have been overcharged before. It's just that you would have waited an hour and a half to be overcharged. So that's the only difference.
To politics now. Voters will have a clear choice in a state Senate district that covers parts of Marion and Hamilton counties. Republican incumbent Mike Delf has made a name for himself battling gay marriage. His criticism of GOP leaders for the way they handled that issue cost him a leadership post. His Democratic opponent, meantime, is openly gay. J.D. Ford says gay marriage is an issue in the race. Here's Delf.
I try to treat everybody with respect and dignity as a human being, but I'm not shy to stand on principle and stand for my Christian conservative convictions.
We have different ethnicities, different religions, and so he only represents a small population of our district, and I want to represent all families in our district.
John Schwannis, is that a race to watch?
Oh, I think so. We have, you know, any more voters complain that they don't have real choices. It's just two versions of the same. Here you have a pretty significant and clear-cut choice. The district, the conventional wisdom is that it leans Republican, probably 55% or so. But when you look at some of the past races, while it's been
Glenda Ridds carried it, Joe Donnelly did.
Barack Obama carried
it. 2008.
Fewer than, I think, about 1,000 votes. He lost it.
In 2012.
Right, Barack Obama, which is the district we're talking about.
Right.
I mean, it's a little bit different district from what had been the case in the past, Pike Township, more Democratic. I think it is a race to watch. I really do.
But clear choice or no clear choice, this is likely a referendum on Mike Delf, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because he's got unusually large name recognition for a lot of the things that occurred before during the session that you referenced in your setup. So he's well known in that district, and it will be, since he's the incumbent, a referendum on him. But that's going to be an interesting thing. What's the turnout going to be? We're in an off year, so there's not likely to be high turnout. And that can cut both ways. I mean, if J.D. Ford can generate a lot of interest and activity, then he might be able to generate the backing he needs to overcome the incumbency. But the opposite could be just as equally true.
Yeah, Mike Delf's already on TV. He's got more resources.
Well, he's got more resources, and he's got more to try to explain away. J.D. Ford's doing just what you need to do in that district, and that is walking door to door. And the response he's getting from people shows that Delf is not only known, but they know he's no longer even in the Republican caucus, that they threw him out. And they're embarrassed by him in large part. And frankly, he's given them ample reason to be embarrassed. I think that's definitely a race to watch.
He's not getting any help from the Republican Party, but he says that he wants it that way.
Oh, I'm sure he does. I'm sure. I believe him when he says that. You know, this is a very clear choice. There's no question about it. But I think it's interesting that so many people would think that everybody's going to make up their mind based on this one issue.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case in
any
election.
Well, there's more than ample.
I don't think there's any. That's
the
case in any
election. There are a lot of positions that Delf has taken on other issues that are equally controversial.
This is a Republican district. I still think that he will keep the seat.
All right. Finally, the Indianapolis native who contracted the Ebola virus in Liberia was in Washington this week. Dr. Kent Brantley appeared before the House Foreign Affairs Committee to discuss the outbreak of the deadly virus in West Africa. He called on the U.S. to lend a hand to fight the crisis.
This is a global problem, and the U.S. must take the lead immediately. The longer we wait, the greater the cost of the battle. both in dollars and in lives. We must act immediately and decisively to bring healing and stability to the people of West Africa, the African continent, the United States, and the world.
And Delaney, will that make a difference?
I hope so. I thought it was a very powerful presentation. And what's really interesting about this is, you know, obviously his experience and his ties here, but the IU Medical School and IU Health is so entwined with this issue in West Africa. I really do hope that Congress responds to this because it is a world problem.
In fact, the president has suggested sending a lot of help over there since that testimony was given.
Yeah, I agree. For anybody to say that that's not a problem, we should not be involved in. That's just wrong. I mean, this is something that could affect the world for a long, long time, and the quicker we stop this, the better off everybody will be.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.